What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into Arya 5 of A Game of Thrones, and in the Maester study we will be discussing the Gold Cloaks.
This is a heartbreaking chapter we're going to be discussing today, Sir Ezra.
Yeah, it's a head roller, that's for sure.
Wow.
Just...
Wow.
Normally that's Sir Matt's job.
I mean, you're already giving away spoilers. I mean, let's not try to get ahead of ourselves. Okay.
Yeah, right. Oh, how many head jokes?
We just lost all of our subscribers.
Everyone literally is gone.
And it's all your fault.
It's my fault. I know.
And then you made a joke, and then I have to make a joke. And
Please come back. Please come back. Wow. I had to get one in before, you know, I knew later on I would forget and Sir Matt would come in there clutch. So anyways, wow. Yeah. But it's a terrible chapter. It's terrible in that, I mean, this shouldn't happen. This Mm-mm. should not happen. And yeah. It does.
Well, just wait till we get there, because then at the end I'm going to do I rewatched the scene of the show, and there's a lot of stuff in the show that I like the way they did it, and I'm going to be getting fired up. Okay, so just wait, hold out for that. I might go on a little bit of a rant.
That's fine.
You're going to love it. So,
okay, good. I have no idea what it's going to be, so I am actually fired up, ready to hear. So, all right. So Wow, let's just move right into small council and let's just get ahead of this here. So, how you doing? You doing all right?
Hey, man, I'm good. Yeah. It's early. You know, we're recording kind of earlier in the day. Well, it's early for me. You know, it's that 3 hour time. It's that 3 hour time difference.
I mean, I just woke up too, so it's cool.
Hey, that's great. Hey, that's great. I mean, guys, this is literally how we do it. I mean, we literally just was like, hey, you want to record at noon? Okay, cool. And then it's like, all right, we just get up, click record, and then I usually have the doc prepped, and so then we just kind of jump into it. So,
yeah,
I don't even have coffee. I don't need it.
No,
I got Game of Thrones to talk about.
Exactly. Dude, and on the coffee note, by the way, I want some accountability out there from folks. I think I'm giving coffee up, man. Like,
I don't drink it, really.
It is, I mean, guys, when you get so past the when you get out of the 20s and you get into the 30s, all right. So I'm in the 30s and 31. Okay, I'm just gonna go ahead and say that. It hurts to say it, but it also feels good.
It hurts. I'll just say that
it hurts. It hurts all over. It hurts all over. But man, that coffee is tearing me up, man. Like my what do you call it? Acid reflux situation.
Something like that. Yeah,
dude. Cold brew is just like gasoline.
It's killing your system. Yeah.
So I gotta either just, you know, crank it back a little bit on that or something. I gotta figure out.
I don't really drink soda. I don't really drink coffee. I don't really drink a lot of caffeine stuff. I mean, I do take pre workout when I go to the gym.
Woo.
Yeah, but that's about it.
Are you still taking which one are you on right now? Are you doing Shatter or which?
No, I'm using Gold Standard.
The Gold Standard. Yes.
Yeah, it's the Gold Standard. I got the green apple and it tastes awful. I'm gonna be switching that as soon as that's over. But
yeah.
Hey, I mean, if you want something with a little more caffeine to start your day than coffee, just take a little shot of pre workout in the morning and
yeah,
Yeah.
Good God. Anyways.
Hey, wow. some of our listeners, I think, drink a lot of coffee because we have been getting a ton of messages from people lately. And a lot of people say they listen to us on their commute. They have, like, really long commutes.
Yeah.
There was some woman who sent us a message saying she has, like, a two-hour commute. I was like, whew.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's way or both way? Or what,
I think that's what she said. I think she said she had a two-hour commute.
Dude, some people do. I mean, some people, like, people I work with will drive, like, an hour and 30 minutes to work. So it's, like, mm-hmm. 3 hours of driving at least a day. And I'm like, wow, that is just... intense. I mean, my drive's an hour, so I mean it's why I listen to podcasts and do audiobooks and stuff. So, but yeah, interesting. Well, if coffee's your thing and you're drinking coffee, keep drinking it. Don't listen to me. You know what you're doing. My body's just weak. All right, mm-hmm. Just can't handle it. Can't handle the coffee. You know, can barely handle water. All right,
jeez.
So, anyways. All right. Well, hey, so yeah, we're getting a lot of, we got some good feedback from folks. We've gotten some good, activity on Patreon. We got some polls going, on in the group and everything. I think people are more and more like we're getting into this, we're finishing up too, you know, Game of Thrones, and we'll be diving into, Clash of Kings, and it's going to be mm-hmm. epic. So the hype is building and building. And I think this is going to be a good fall for us, mm-hmm. You know, to keep chugging ahead. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wanted to say we have our stickers, our sticker designs are in. And so we're going to be showing those on Facebook here shortly, giving some people one last chance kind of to jump into that Patreon tier to get those. And then we'll be shipping those out here very shortly. So,
yeah. Yep. Trying to keep ahead of things. So.
Right. You're just going to keep saying that word, aren't you? This whole episode. You're just going to keep...
it's fitting, right? So where we're at. It's a theme.
Okay.
Okay. So let's see here. Let's move on, right? Let's move mm-hmm. out of the... Any other updates in the small council?
That's it, man.
Things we got. Okay. All right, cool beans. So let's move on over to the captain's report. And this is something cool that we've added. You know, we're willing to add things to the show as stuff like this... pops up because mm-hmm.
just I know a handful of people have kind of taken over our Facebook group, and it's great. It's like the whole Captain of the Guard tier on Patreon, and those people are kind of taking over the Facebook group, and it's great because really helping us build a community and helping with content. We try to keep this episode, I think, there for a while. We were always around about an hour, but we've kind of been like, you know, if we could stretch it to about an hour and a half now that we're not mm-hmm. you know, we're not doing Fallout Friday right now, so hey, we got those people who have those long commutes, so I think the hour and a half mark is great. So stuff like this helps us kind of add in some time.
Well, yeah, and if people are doing, you know, pretty cool polls, it's sort of like a mini version of what used to be Fallout Friday, because that poll can be about anything. And so we've got, you know, Lord Robert, the Unfrozen of House Butler. He's been running the polls. I've also hit up Lady Amanda just last night and kind of trying to think of something we can do there in the Facebook group, something else there. But they're all kind of, you know, managing, running. Sir Ron, Sir Dustin, Lord Hunter are all kind of helping out with the Facebook group. And so it's huge. It's pretty cool. So
yeah,
those
it's,
are your,
it's
your
awesome.
Captain
it's,
of the Guards.
Yeah, it's great.
So... another quick thing before I forget, the Discord server, Sir Ant, it's blowing up. It's amazing. Fantasy League, there was a talk of some fantasy football starting up. So I wanted to say that now before we get to the point where it's like past time to sign up for it. So there's a fantasy league that's been started, and I think Lord Robert was going to start maybe another league maybe or something. If one filled up, we would make another one.
Yeah, that was talked about in the Facebook group. I saw that they said, hey, let's start a fantasy football league. I was like, great. I unfortunately don't have really the time. You know, I used to be big into fantasy football, but I've kind of scaled back a little bit.
Are you just worried that I'd beat you?
Okay, so... let's okay, hold on a second here. Okay, let me tell you guys something. Let me just run you down a little rabbit hole here. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sir Ezra plays fantasy football. So I am a NFL, like, historian. Like, I the whole deal. I love it. It's like one of my biggest passions. I've applied to actually to work at like the NFL before. So if anybody who works at the NFL is listening and wants to hook me up, let me tell you, I can tell you. Yeah. I know everything there is to know.
Yeah.
I'll go on trial by combat by that. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, every year Sir Ezra plays fantasy football with his coworkers. And every year he comes to me, he's like, Matt, would you start this guy or this guy this week? Or and I'm like, well, who's in like the free agency pool? Oh, I don't know. Like, remember that year when I was like, you need to go sign Chris Johnson because he's going to have a bounce back year. I'm telling you. And he did.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, it's huge. Well, here's the thing. What I'm saying is I've squired under you for a long time.
Okay. Let's.
All right. So I have been knighted and I'm ready to. No, I don't know. It'd be kind of funny. So if another group opens up there, what take a look and see. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe I'll play. Yeah.
I might jump in just for fun. So anyways, yeah, so there's an update. But yeah, let's jump into this poll here. We've got the captain's report. So last week's poll, we like to go over the results, and then I'll tell you the poll that's kind of currently happening right now. So last week's poll was, who or what is Lightbringer? And this is something we talked a lot about in Follow Up Friday. And we've got different thoughts and theories. Is it something more symbolic? Is it a person? Is it an actual sword? So the top results were Dawn at number one. And then number two, doesn't exist yet. And then three, Lightbringer, as in Stannis's sword, was a top. Getting the top three there. And there were other options. Let me see if I can find this real quick here. So we had, oh my gosh, we had Arya was in there at number four, and Longclaw. People were writing in options here. The Night's Watch. Wow, people had like a glass candle. It doesn't exist at all. Let's see, Oathkeeper, Dany's Dragons, Dark Sister, and so on. So it's kind of neat that people can, you start off with what some of the most common thoughts are, and we vote on that, and then from there, people can add in other options that maybe we didn't think of or what have you. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty cool. Now, this week's poll, which I think is about to close here, maybe on Monday, is who is Varys truly? So we'll go over the results of that next week. But yeah, it's pretty cool. I actually am really enjoying the polls and seeing what people. It just kind of keeps it fresh in my mind. I'm reminded of these, you know, thoughts and theories and that are still kind of floating out there, and some things that the show didn't answer yet. So, you know, interested in seeing what folks think. And also, we have new listeners coming in, so we want to know what they think. And maybe somebody
absolutely
can add to the conversation. So
yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's interesting with when you mention like the new listeners, because we have people message us all the time. They're like, oh, I'm on episode 54, and it's like wow, it's like just weird to think that people are behind.
Yeah,
and they're listening because we do it a lot. You know, we do it every week, and so like they'll catch up, and so then we'll share something, and then they'll catch it up. And so it's just interesting for me to think about sometimes when that happens. So
it's also like a refresher. People bring up stuff from weeks
absolutely
or months ago, and I'm like, wow, okay, yeah, that's cool. Didn't think about that back then.
Yeah,
so we'll try to include that in the conversation.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, should we head over to the Maester study here? Just kind of a little description of the gold cloaks here, Sir Ezra.
Yeah, and not much on this, honestly. There's not a whole, I'm not going to go super deep on this. Just in this chapter, we talk about the gold cloaks. And I think I mentioned them. Remember when Eddard is taken and he's captured and things that we talked about it there as well. But, you know, basically it's the city watch of King's Landing. And they're known as the Gold Cloaks. And in this chapter, Arya kind of sees them here and there. And everywhere she kind of turns, like, boom, there's like a Gold Cloak. So, and she's trying just to survive, really. But they are defenders of the city of King's Landing, including the Red Keep. And they're the enforcers of the law, right? So they are sworn only to the Iron Throne. The watch presumably falls under the under the bailiwick of the Master of Law. So just talking about how it's governed and who they really report to and things. So, let's see. Yeah. Okay. So, and they it tells you that they garrison, that they have these different barracks right around the city, you know, the over by Dragon Gate and Cobbler Square and different things. So there's some little nuggets there. Now, it the City Watch was established under the Targaryen dynasty during Maegor the Cruel's rule. So, yeah, that it goes back that far, if you will, because you remember, you know, Aegon the Conqueror didn't have at first, you know, a Kingsguard, right? And so Visenya is sort of like helping him form the Kingsguard, and then after Aenys and then into Maegor, they come up with the Gold Cloaks and the City Watch. So it's just kind of cool to look at the evolution of this, and I thought part of this chapter, one of the themes is more of this world slash city building, because we get a lot about Flea Bottom in this chapter with Arya, and just sort of some of the running around of the city, laying some of the groundwork. I mean, we learn a lot about King's Landing, I guess, in this chapter, and it's just kind of cool to see her interact with these different folks, and one of those groups happens to be the Gold Cloaks.
Yeah, this is really one of the first chapters where you get a little bit of the life in King's Landing, just because, you know, Arya is running around and she's trying to get some food and things like that. So, yeah, as you said, we don't really get a lot of those chapters really of what it's like. Like, it's always what's going on in the Red Keep, not necessarily what's going on in King's Landing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. Now, one other thing, and I was just reading here, and I forgot to mention this. So that all sounds great, right? The Gold Cloaks are good, and they're supposed to be helping out and everything, but they're actually known to take bribes and to be kind of like easily influenced and mm-hmm. selling positions and trying to they do mischievous things to get promoted and stuff like that. So they're right now under the command of Janus Slynt. So we'll see him later in a different location, far, far north. But for right now, he is in command of the City Watch. And, you know, the wiki kind of notes here just that Robert kept the Gold Cloaks around even after the Targaryens, you know, were ousted. So, and it's just kind of decayed a little bit. Everything seems to be just like the standard fell, I guess, under Robert, you know, like the Kingsguard standard, like the morals and Barristan Selmy often talks just about like how these men wearing the white cloaks are not the same as they were of old, right? And I feel like that's sort of somewhat the same of the Gold Cloaks, although the Gold Cloaks have had a back and forth. They've not always been the best, to be quite frank, as I look at the histories and stuff. They've had a lot. They've always been, it depends on who's commanding them and who's leading them. It just depends. So if you've got a fellow like Slynt in there, it's not going to go well. But there were other good commanders and there were bad commanders, and they're easily kind of swayed and stuff. But they're around, and so when we mention them, don't be confused. I remember when I first was first reading the series, like I was getting Gold Cloaks and White Cloaks mixed up just a little bit, and then also seeing the show and seeing how there's like they wear their Gold Cloaks, or I'm sorry, mm-hmm. the White Cloaks, so the Kingsguard, had sort of golden trim sometimes, mm-hmm. right? And I don't know, it just threw me for a little bit, so I always like to make sure we talk about the difference for some of those folks who are just kind of coming in or just learning, wanting to know more about these different factions in King's Landing. So that's it. Real simple, straightforward. We'll talk, they'll, again, keep kind of popping up, and we'll encounter them throughout the rest of the series.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on over to the reread. This week, we're taking a look at Arya 5. Last week, we were in Daenerys 8, where Khal Drogo had fell off his horse. Daenerys had ordered her Khalasar to halt and call for Mira Mazdur. And there was some blood magic going on. Things not necessarily looking good for Khal Drogo there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not at all.
So the last time we were in an Arya chapter, Arya 4, Arya was training with Syrio Forel, where she was and then interrupted by Meryn Trant and a party of the Lannister guardsmen. Meryn demanded Arya come with him. Syrio senses something odd and fights the guards, giving Arya time to escape. At the stables, Arya finds her sword Needle and kills a stable boy who attempts to capture her before escaping via the dungeons of the Red Keep. So, this week, Arya 5, Arya is surviving on the streets of King's Landing by hunting pigeons when she hears the summoning bells. She joins in the crowd to watch her father confess his treason. Once the confession is done, King Joffrey demands his head. Arya attempts to get to him, but Yoren of the Night's Watch stops her. Afterwards, he declared that she is coming with him.
Mm. Wow. Pigeons and cats, man. That's what this is about.
So, all right here, I usually like to read just the opening little paragraph here. The scent of hot bread drifting from the shops along the Street of Flour was sweeter than any perfume Arya had ever smelled. She took a deep breath and stepped closer to the pigeon. It was a plump one, speckled brown, busily pecking at a crust that had fallen between two cobblestones. But when Arya's shadow touched it, it took to the air. And that's kind of the first part of this chapter. And actually, I think it's kind of a good idea of what Arya's life is about to become for the foreseeable future. She is about to be kind of on the lam, I guess, kind of roaming around from town to town, you know, whether it's with the Brotherhood Without Banners or the Hound or over in Braavos. This is really kind of what the stage will be for Arya chapters moving forward.
Yeah, trying to survive. Yeah, trying to just make it right and learning. And it's amazing what Syrio has taught her in the short amount of time and how it really sticks with her and influences her. And even think about little kids, sort of like this. This has been a tragic sort of experience for her. It's sort of really intense. But she, right before this, had a new experience that was really positive and really good. And so she leans on it very heavily. I mean, really leans on his teachings, and she'll recall her father's words of wisdom as well. But it's interesting how much Syrio really kind of saves her even when he's not there. I mean, just by his teachings.
Yeah, and I think she has some of the most interesting teachers. If you look at kind of the end of the series, you know, with the show and even the books, where we're at in the books. And who it is that influences the characters, especially these young Stark children, and how they kind of get to where they are.
Yeah.
You know, John is influenced quite a bit by Maester Aemon and Jorah Mormont. And I think that's kind of interesting how his character progresses. And then, you know, Arya, as you know, we just said, she's influenced by like the Hound and Syrio Forel and Jaqen H'ghar, and just to see how she ends up how they just kind of how like their viewpoints differ too.
Yeah. Yeah, really. I mean, and so you talk about how a character evolves. Well, I mean, one of the things I've heard George talk about is he mentions this with Bran, is that he's writing about children too. And this point of view is from a children's perspective, a child's perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I've been thinking about that more as I read the series. And so, yeah, these teachers, it's almost like you have to take the best of that teacher, and you have to, like, what with the Hound, you got to take like, what do you do there? I mean, she hates the Hound at first, right? Mm-hmm. And as far as we know, I mean, still in the books anyways, like there's a lot of animosity going on there, but something's happening. She's learning that, just because he's not coming out and saying whatever, you know, or really showing his true colors, doesn't mean that they're not still there. So, yeah, her mind is developing and her character is developing right in front of us here. So, and it's because of these teachers and their differing opinions and things like that. I mean, so Sansa later is going to be influenced by Peter Baelish, right? Mm-hmm. And she'll think about what her mother taught her and things like that. Bran. Going to go up and learn from old Bloodraven, you know, three of the yeah, so there's that. But
okay, so Arya then starts kind of practicing trying to hit a bird out of the air with like her wooden sword, and eventually she ends up getting one, and then she kind of, you know, snaps its neck. And she is trying to trade it for, you know, the guy, the man with the push cart who has some treats, like she's asking for like a lemon treat or anything. you know, I'll trade you a fat pigeon, she said. The others take your pigeon, the pushcart man said. The tarts were still warm from the oven. The smells were making her mouth water, but she did not have three coppers or one. She gave the pushcart man a look, remembering what Sirio had told her about seeing. He was short with a little round belly, and when he moved, he seemed to favor his leg a bit. She was just thinking that if she snatched a tart and ran, he would never be able to catch her. And then he kind of, I think, notices, and he says, you be keeping your filthy hands off. The gold cloaks know how to deal with thieving little gutter rats, that they do. So she doesn't end up stealing one. She just ends, but then she starts to hear kind of like a rustle and people talking as people are kind of moving towards the Sept of Baelor.
Yeah, and there's some other bustle that kind of makes her think that these gold cloaks might not pay any special attention to her, right? Because there's all this talk of, well, the bells, right? So the mm-hmm. summoning bells will happen, and then there's the conversations. This is a great chapter for, because this will happen in inns and keeps and even in war councils, where rumor has come in or reports are coming in about a king's death or a different group of people on the move or whatever. It's the gossip of the town, and she kind of overhears what may have happened to King Robert. And mm-hmm. there's like one line of truth, and but surrounded by about 6 to 7 different lies, not lies, or maybe just misconceptions or, you know, rumors that are just not true. So I think George is kind of showing us like that is something that he will do. I mean, we have to know a couple chapters back, like what actually happened. And then we're like, oh, well, there we go. That's the truth. But then our characters don't know. And so it builds that suspense or that dramatic irony, if you will, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And again, right. Like that his brother killed him or something, or that his,
mm-hmm. yeah, that, right here it says, she had also heard things, scary things, things that made no sense to her. Some had said her father had murdered King Robert and had been slain in turn by Lord Renly. Others insisted that Renly had killed the king in a drunken quarrel between the brothers. Why else should he have fled in the night like a common thief? One story said the king had been killed by a boar while hunting. Another that he died eating a boar, stuffing himself so full that he ruptured at the table. No, the king had died at the table, others said, but only because Varys the spider poisoned him. No, it had been the queen who poisoned him. No, he had died of a pox. No, he had choked on a fishbone. So, again, this is something that we bring it up a lot. It's kind of the thing you just have to continue to hammer home, is that this story is told through us entirely by characters' point of view, characters' perspectives. And even if you go back and you look at the older books, I shouldn't say the older books, but the history kind of books, like World of Ice and Fire and Fire and Blood, is those are written by maesters, and they often will put in conflicting reports. So even then, it's hard to write. It's hard to consider a history that they're writing about to be truthful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like when you go back and you're talking about the difference between, say, Maester Yandel and Mushroom mm-hmm. arguing back and forth about this is what happened here, this is what happened here.
Sure.
And it's one of the things when we finish the chapter and I talk about the difference between the show and the books that I kind of like what the show did, because this chapter is, again, told through us through Arya's perspective. And it's one of the reasons I think that it's taking Gurr so long to write the final books, because if it goes like we've seen it in the show, you know, you and I have talked about this before, Sir Ezra, is who do you pick to be the storyteller for some of the scenes we saw in the show? Right. The dragon pit scene. Who do you pick? Like, all of the main characters are there. It's a different story. If this chapter had been told through us through the eyes of Sansa, it would be a totally different story than through the eyes of Arya, who's out in the streets and she's hearing the hustle and bustle, and you get kind of that King's Landing side, as we talked about, that flea bottom side of this, as opposed to Sansa, who is going to be, you know, she would probably be kind of, we'd be reading about how she's walking up to the Sept, and she's thinking about mm-hmm. how Joffrey's going to do what he says he's going to do. And mm-hmm. when she sees her father walk before her, it would be a totally different story than through Arya. And so, I mean, that's what Ger, you know, has to do with these chapters is who do I pick to be the storyteller?
Well, yeah, and it's also, what do you want to do to the reader? I mean, so in this chapter, it's like we're a little bit confused. We're a little thrown because Arya is also kind of confused. Like, what do the bells mean? Where are we going? What's happening? Is sort of the mood, right, that we're in. Mm-hmm. And with Sansa, as you say, it would have been sort of a roller coaster. So they're like really happy emotions, and even Arya sees that. Like, she's happy at one point and then really brought low because of what happens, and you can almost then through Arya you're confused by that, but you're also, it's almost like a like we as readers notice it, but I don't know if Arya would be processing what happened to her sister up there on the stage because, you know, of what's happening to her father. But it's, yeah, it's really important who you choose to tell the story and what you want to do to your reader. What is the mood you're trying to
Well, I think one of the really good things about it, Arya being the storyteller in this scene, as opposed to say Sansa, or even, you know, they didn't have had Cersei chapters at yet, but you mm-hmm. know, somebody else, or even Eddard Stark, even if he were the storyteller, I think you know, if Eddard Stark were the storyteller in this, if this were his point of view, it would be, you know, it'd be far more of his emotion and his kind of decisions, you know, I'm going to say the wrong thing to save my family. But I kind of like that it's Arya here, because then you get it feels more chaotic, because that's ultimately what the outcome of this chapter is mm-hmm. pure chaos is what is caused from this. It starts a war, you know, the War of Five Kings. I mean, the entire Westeros, because of this decision right here, Westeros completely goes into open rebellion, and the throne is up for bidding to who has the strongest army.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, another thing too, before we move on here in the chapter, I mean, with Sansa, you'll get, like, I think we have one more Sansa point of view, and you could get a flashback, right? You get some of her recollections of mm-hmm. what happened and things like that, and you'll get that from other characters as we move forward. So you can still do that. And the reason we don't have the Eddard perspective is because it wasn't actually him up there, right?
Well, okay, I mean, yeah.
just kidding. But, all really good points. Yeah.
So, okay. So Arya is hearing, you know, people are, there's a lot of commotion. We're moving forward. They kind of start walking towards as they're hearing the bells. Let's see. I'm trying to see what's another good chapter here. You know, Arya's thinking about, she's still kind of thinking about how she shouldn't steal, you know, and stealing food. We get kind of world building here, right? They're, you know, they're talking about in Flea Bottom, there's pot shops. You know, you could trade half your bird for a bowl of brown. You know, so then they talk about how the pot shops are never empty. So it's just kind of some world building here.
Right. Yeah. Which, as I said, like even just the description of the cobblestones and the shops. And as you said, bowl of brown. And what does that mean? And then
I don't know, but I don't want any.
No, I don't either. It's contrasted with milk and lemon cakes and tarts and stuff like that. So completely different world that she's kind of, it's like the underworld that she's mm-hmm. fallen into here. So,
yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So they're just, continuing on some world building here. She had tried to talk to some of the children she saw, hoping to make a friend that could give her a place to sleep. But she must have talked wrong or something. The little ones had only looked her with a quick, wary eyes and ran away, and she came too close. Their bigger brothers and sisters asked questions Arya couldn't answer, called her names, and tried to steal from her. Only yesterday, a scrawny, barefoot girl twice her age had knocked her down and tried to pull her boots off, but Arya gave her a crack on the ears with her stick sword that sent her off sobbing and bleeding. Then this is actually a really cool line. I posted this on our Instagram because I was just hearing it, thinking like, oh, here's some foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. A gull wheeled overhead as she made her way down the hill toward Flea Bottom. Arya glanced at it thoughtfully, but it was well beyond the reach of her stick. It made her think of the sea. Maybe that was the way out. old Nan used to tell stories of boys who stowed away on trading galleys and sailed off into all kinds of adventures. Maybe Arya could do that too.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe she could. Maybe yeah. she will.
Yeah. I mean, you know, she goes wow. to Braavos, and then if her ending is anything like the show, I mean, sailing off as right here in the beginning, or, you know, right here in the beginning book, man.
Right. Yeah. The idea that she would want to travel wide and far. Yeah. Far and wide. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's cool. looking, she's kind of looking for ways out of the city. She wants to try to escape the city. So, yeah. She talks to somebody, and they talk about what, you know, what's the ship here? What ship is this? She's the Wind Witch out of Mir. The man said, she's still here. Arya blurted. The longshoreman gave her a queer look, shrugged, and walked away. Arya ran toward the pier. The Wind Witch was the ship father had had hired to take her home. Still waiting. She'd imagined that it sailed ages ago. You know, so she's thinking, oh, maybe I can get out of here. But like, as that's kind of happening is when the bells start ringing.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, just a quick aside here. So the Wind Witch, why is the Wind Witch still there? I mean, is there ever any, I mean, is it just left there and didn't know what to do, or is it, does it have another, you know, job to do? Why is it still there?
You know, let me look that up. I will look that up really quick.
I was wondering if there was any thoughts and theories on, you know, it's like if Eddard was out doing his thing and maybe, well, I mean, again, he's still alive, right? As many people think.
So yeah.
It's never really brought up again though, I don't think, in later books. So yeah, it's just, they're chilling, maybe trying to get another commission or another contract or something. But interesting that she encounters it. I mean, could she have stowed aboard a ship and just gotten away? But part of the problem is, too, her family is still here, and she's maybe trying to figure out how to survive and how to either locate her father or rescue her father.
It doesn't say. I just looked it up. That's just it. It's just that book. It's just still hanging out there. So,
Yeah. Well, Winds of Winter, folks. It'll be back, and Eddard will come riding in.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so then she saw some guardsmen on the third pier in gray woolen cloaks trimmed with the white sun. The sight of Winterfell's colors brought tears to her eyes. Behind them, a sleek, three-banked trading galley rocked at her moorings. Arya could not read the name. She's the Wind Witch out of Mir. So she even sees Stark men there, which is crazy to think about, that there's still this, or, you know, like Stark banners in in King's Landing, with what's about to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. That is nuts.
Mm-hmm. So Arya's still kind of asking people, she wants to buy a pigeon, trying to get some food. The bells are ringing. People are kind of, still kind of moving. And then we hear, we see some people kind of arguing with each other about like what the bells mean. You know, one, it's like some guy and some woman are kind of, are yelling at each other, you know, and she's calling her like a dumb slut, and she's, telling, you know, him like, I'll ring your bells, like all this stuff. Like they're just kind of going back and forth, yelling at each other. And Arya's kind of hearing it. She's like, where are you? And then she kind of runs down and asks them, you know, where are you going? What's happening? They say the Gold Cloaks is carrying him to the Sept. Who? She yelled, running hard. The Hand. They'll be taking his head off. You know, so she is kind of like, what is going on? And, you know, more people are walking. More people are kind of running up. They're carrying him up to Baelor's Sept. I heard he was dead. Soon enough. Hope I got me a silver stag if they lop his head off.
Yeah, so kind of making wagers and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, Arya's struggling to find her voice. She started, but she was only a child, and they talked right over her. More people yelling at each other. Fool, they ain't never going to lop him. Since when do they nick traitors on the steps of the Great Sept? Well, if they don't mean to anoint him, no, they don't mean to anoint him, no knight. I heard it was Stark killed old King Robert, slit his throat in the woods, and when they found him, he stood there as cool as you please and said it was some old boar did for his grace. You know, that's not true. And then so they're it was his own brother did it, that Renly him with his gold antlers. So they're just, again, that kind of mm-hmm. what are the stories that we actually get? What are the stories that actually come out? You know, the people don't really entirely know. So,
yeah. Can I bring up something real quick? That's just before I forget it. And it's kind of interesting. So I think the Lannisters are doing something here. I mean, like having one hostage, having Sansa, and is great, right? So they have Sansa. She's with them. They have Eddard. He's about to make this confession, and in Cersei's mind, he's going to go to the wall. This will end this war. My son now is in control. I don't have my glutton of a husband. I don't have Robert Baratheon around anymore. So she's sitting good. She's feeling good about this. But what would be better would be to have Arya. If she could actually possess Arya and have another bargaining chip, right? Like, okay, and I'll even show you guys, I could give you one daughter in good faith, but I'm keeping the other one, type of thing. So if she had, the more bargaining chips you have, the better you are. And I was just rereading this, and this is why we do a reread, because I had never noticed this. We were talking about the Wind Witch there. They're actually Lannister men. It looks like kind of, they're strangers. Syrio had told her to like look with her eyes, and to really see, and she knew all of her father's men, and these men were strangers to her that were in this garb. So you wonder why the Wind Witch is there. It's there because the Lannisters found out that that was a ship that was hired to take Eddard away, to take the family away. So they're baiting Arya into hoping she goes up and approaches them and says, "I'm Arya Stark. You know, I'm trying to get out of here. And then boom, they're going to take her into custody. The other part is coming out here and publicly making it this proclamation or whatever. If Arya is just out in the city and lost or whatever, or hiding, she might come forward. You know, she's a young child, and she's going to come forward and maybe cry out to her father and beg for him to help her or something. And then boom, they get to seize her. So it does a lot. I mean, also he's going to confess, and it sort of helps to legitimize and put this whole bastard born children out of the, well, it's in the public eye already, and then now we're gonna put an end to it here, and we're gonna make Eddard Stark the traitor. He's the bad guy and what have you. So it does a lot of things, but I mean, I think the other part here is that they were subtly trying to get Arya. They want her, and she becomes a big point of discussion throughout several, well, she has been in previous point of view chapters, and then going forward, no one knows where she is, and you know, Catelyn is worried that maybe the Lannisters, did they kill her? Did they do something with her, or can they not find her? Is there hope in that? So, anyways, I don't know. I just noticed it because those are totally Lannister men standing there in front of the Wind Witch, waiting for Arya to show up, and that kind of really changes things. It just shows you like they're in the know on a lot of this and plotting and planning. So.
Yeah. I mean, think about how big of a botch job Joffrey does here.
Oh,
I mean,
as
you were saying there, I mean, you have Eddard Stark, you have Sansa. Even without Arya, you're still in a huge position of power, because if you send Ned Stark to the wall, which I don't know that they would do, because at this point, you know, you have Robb who's marching down south.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Would you
hold on to him for a little while?
I think you'd hold on to him. Yeah, because even if you say, oh, you were going to send him to the wall, you're sending him back to the north. So
they would make the young wolf come down and you know, swear his sword and say it was a misunderstanding.
And they could also, they could even keep Sansa and say, we're keeping her as our ward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to kind of like the Ned Stark, you know, did with Balon Greyjoy. So.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, they really didn't have to do anything at this point.
Yep. I know. It's huge botchery.
It's huge. It is like a terrible, terrible decision. And
the
I
only
think
one
that,
who doesn't botch this is Cyril in pain, just to be.
Yeah, he doesn't. Clear. He does his job. So. Yeah, he gets it. He gets it right.
Yeah. Anyways. But yeah. So the bells are really loud, as you said. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, the crowds are gathering. It says Arya squirmed through the press, ducking between the legs of horses and clutching tight to her sword stick. From the middle of the crowd, all she could see were arms and legs and stomachs. And the seven slender towers of the Slepts, the Sept looming over her. She had spotted a wood wagon and thought it to climb up into the back where she might be able to see, but others had the same idea. The teamster cursed at them and drove off with the crack of the whip. Arya grew frantic. Forcing her way to the front of the crowd, she was shoved up against the stone of a plinth. She looked up at Baelor the Blessed and the Septon King. Sliding her stick sword through her belt, Arya began to climb. Her broken thumbnail left smears of blood on the printed marble, but she made it up and wedged herself in between the king's feet. That is when she saw her father. Lord Eddard stood on the high septon's pulpit outside the doors of the Sept, supported between two of the gold cloaks. He was dressed in a rich gray velvet doublet with a white wolf sewn on the front in beads, and a gray wool cloak trimmed with fur, but he was thinner than Arya had ever seen him. His long face drawn with pain, he was not standing so much as being held up. The cast over his broken leg was gray and rotten.
Mm. Mm. This is just, as you reread this, like Arya's, her whimperings and the things that go unsaid. So there's a lot of stuff in that's italicized that she's thinking, but she knows she can't say. Mm-hmm. Instincts taking over, and she realizes that, you know, she would be foolish to kind of shout out and give herself away here. She's just confused, and you're almost in shock. And I think maybe she does make a charge here later, but like, you almost regret, like, could I have done more? Is there something else I could have done? Should I have snuck up there earlier and tried to do something? It's just, it's terrible, terrible to see her father up here. And we know what a good, honorable man he is. And we also know, as the reader, that he was in the right, that he was trying to do what was right for his friend, Robert Baratheon, and the mm-hmm. betrayal that was done to him. So, yeah, man.
So... Arya starts to describe the scene starts getting set. You have Joffrey up there. You know, he is prominent among them and with his cloaks, crimson, silk and satin pattern with prancing stags and roaring lions. His queen mother stood beside him in a black mourning gown slashed with crimson, a veil of black diamonds in her hair. Arya recognized the Hound. She saw Varys. I don't think they say Littlefinger, but Littlefinger is there. In the show.
One who dueled for her mother. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it says the pointed beard might be the one who had fought a duel for her mother.
Oh, okay. Where do you see that at? Did I skip that part?
Yeah, so she saw Varys, the eunuch, gliding among the lords in soft slippers and a patterned
right there. Yep. And
robe.
She's like,
yep.
And the short man with... Yes, yes, you're right. Yeah, yeah, because Littlefinger is there in the show.
Yeah.
And in their midst was Sansa, dressed in sky blue silk with her long auburn hair, washed and curled and with and silver bracelets on her wrist. Arya scowled, wondering what her sister was doing here, why she looked so happy.
Yep.
A long line of golden cloak spearmen held back the crowd, commanded by a stout man in elaborate armor, all black lacquer and gold. I don't know what that word is. His cloak had the metallic shimmer of true cloth of gold. And so, it's not looking good.
No, no, not at all. And this is where her father, you know, he lifts his head and he starts to speak and they can't hear him, right? So Slint's up there kind of prodding him and stuff. And again, from her perspective, you get the descriptions of people that we know. So in the black and gold armor, you know, we have somebody stepping up behind her father. And then earlier we had the description of Littlefinger, Baelish, but we don't really know his name. So just things like that. She doesn't know who all these people are, but she can describe them for us. And then we can kind of figure out, you know, who they are. But they want him to speak louder. The crowd's kind of shouting, what? Louder. And, you know, she's thinking, you leave him alone. She wanted to shout, but she knew no one would listen. She chewed her lip. So she's wanting to say these things, but she doesn't. And this is what her father says, though, right? He raised his voice and began again. I am Eddard Stark, Lord of Winterfell and Hand of the King, he said more loudly, his voice carrying across the plaza. And I come before you to confess my treason in the sight of gods and men. And then you can hear Arya just kind of whimper, no, right? Below her, the crowd began to scream and shout. So obscenities are filling the air. I mean, he's a traitor, you know, and this is a spectacle for these people. You know, they're miserable. They want to see that they all probably believe, right, that the higher ups, the people in politics, or the royals are just screwing them all over. They don't have good lives, but those people do. And here's somebody who was a traitor. And so they're shouting, and they'll start throwing things here in a bit. But yeah, so he raises his voice a little bit higher. I betrayed the faith of my king and the trust of my friend Robert, he shouted. I swore to defend and protect his children, yet before his blood was cold, I plotted to depose and murder his son and seize the throne for myself. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely crazy that is what he was probably forced to say. I mean, that's what they said. Like, it's not just a, like, I don't know. It's just, it's crazy. It had to be a bold confession that he was straight up a traitor. It's just, it's nuts. Let the high septon and Baelor the Beloved and the Seven bear witness to the truth of what I say. Joffrey Baratheon is the one true heir to the Iron Throne, and by the grace of all the gods, Lord of the Seven Kingdoms and Protector of the Realm. It just sucks, man. It just mm-hmm. sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, anyways.
And then, you know, she's Arya's standing there, and we get her, you know, her thoughts. Her hand slid beneath her cloak and found needle in its sheath. She tightened her fingers around the grip, squeezing as hard as she ever had squeezed anything. Please, gods, keep him safe, she prayed. Don't let them hurt my father. The high septum knelt before Joffrey and his mother. As we sin, so do we suffer. And this man has confessed his crimes in the sight of gods and men here in this holy place. The gods are just, yet Baelor the Blessed taught us that they are also merciful. What shall be done with this traitor, your grace? And in the show, it's Grandmaster Pycelle that says that. In the book, it's the high septon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yep. So what should we do? I mean, this is all... It's basically a play. I mean, we're essentially watching a play in front of us. I mean, it's like Eddard has his lines, and then the High Septon has his line, and then Joffrey's supposed to say this thing, and he goes off script. I mean, he just improvs, and it's the worst consequence you can get mm-hmm. from improvising. I mean, it's mm-hmm. bad.
So, you know, Joffrey steps forward. My mother bids me let Lord Eddard take the black, and Lady Sansa has begged mercy for her father. He looked straight at Sansa and then and smiled. And for a moment, Arya thought that the gods had heard her prayer until Joffrey turned back to the crowd and said, but they have the soft hearts of women. So long as I am your king, treason shall never go unpunished. Sir Ellen, bring me his head. The crowd roared, and Arya felt the statue of Baelor rock as they surged against it. The High Septon clutched at the king's cape, and Varys came rushing over, waving his arms, and even the queen was saying something to him, but Joffrey shook his head. Lords and knight moved aside as he stepped through, tall and fleshless, a skeleton in iron mail, the king's justice. Dimly, as if far off, Arya heard her sister scream. Sansa had fallen to her knees, sobbing hysterically. Sir Ellen Plain climbed the steps of the pulpit.
Dude, I mean, absolute chaos. I mean, it's ridiculous. And, you know, I was thinking, so Joffrey, he gets scolded, and he gets kind of told what to do behind closed doors. But when you go out in front of everybody like that, they can't openly, I mean, they could. They could put a regency on him. I mean, right? He's supposed to have a, like, his mm-hmm. mother is the regent, right? So why can't? But we had an issue like this back in the histories, right? Where I forget what it was. One of the Baratheons was trying to tell one of our Dragon Kings what to do, and even though he was a minor, he was sort of like, "No, I'm not gonna listen to you. Kingsguard is sworn to me." I mean, and that's sort of what he is taking advantage of here. He mm-hmm. knows that his mother and these other folks can't do anything openly. They can't I don't know. It's because of this mass of people, and it would sort of undermine his rule if they were to go over and just outright say no. Put you know, Cerlin, stop this and all that kind of stuff. It just it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. So let's see. Then Arya grabs her sword and tries to essentially charge up, like, you know, up to the stage. But, you know, hear you, an angry voice shouted at Arya, but she bowled past, shoving people aside, squirming between them, slamming into anyone in her way. A hand fumbled at her leg, and she hacked at it, kicked at shins. A woman stumbled, and Arya ran up her back, cutting to both sides, but it was no good, no good. There were too many people. No sooner did she make a hole than it closed again. Somebody buffeted her aside. She could still hear Sansa screaming. Sir Ilyn drew a two-handed greatsword from the scabbard on his back as he lifted the blade above his head. Sunlight seemed to ripple and dance down the dark metal, glinting off an edge sharper than any razor. Ice, she thought. He has ice. Her tears streamed down her face, blinding her. And then a hand shot out of the press and closed around her arm like a wolf trap, so hard that needle went flying from her hand. Arya wasn't wrenched off her feet, so she would have fallen if it hadn't helped her up as easily as if she were a doll. A face pressed close to hers, long black hair and tangled beard and rotten teeth. Don't look, a thick voice snarled at her. And this is
she's sobbing.
This is Yoren, and he says, "Look at me, you know, remember, boy." And this is where he starts to say, "You know, you're a boy now. You know, that's a bright boy," because he doesn't want her to, you know, if he can sell her off as a boy, then it's going to be far more beneficial to her. So, and as it kind of ends here, it's let's see here, oh, and that's just when Yoren ends up cutting her hair. You know, he says, my name is Yoren. I hope you can use that boy. He just keeps saying that. She says, I'm not a boy. And then he cuts her hair. So.
Wow. Yeah. He finds needle four and puts it back in her hand and everything. I mean, it's just, holy cow, man. I mean, what's so sad about it is that is, as far as we know, like the last thing that Lord Eddard Stark will say to us. Mm-hmm. Right, it's we've heard all these other great lines and quotable things, but it's like the last thing that he says. And maybe there was more that was said as he was going, you know, to his knees or whatever, and maybe he said a few things, or he maybe I'm hoping he like was looking towards Sansa and telling her it's okay, everything's fine. You know what I mean? It just breaks your heart. I'm sure he was doing that, and it also makes you think of the histories. How many other people were forced to maybe make that confession and they were promised something else? And then it's like, oh, well, no, we got what we wanted. See ya. We're never going to let you come back and tell us, like, tell the true story later on. So it kind of, it dies. You know, all the scheming and the lying, the things that Lord Eddard had learned, they're gone. He unless he passes those on or had written something or sent a raven, it's over.
Yeah.
So,
okay. So I quickly kind of want to talk about the difference between the show and the books. So it, in the show, it plays out almost the exact same way. But you know, we get to see that viewpoint of the camera angles on, a few more people, and they really only add about one thing, but I think that the one thing they add is so cool and it fits so well with Lord Eddard's character that it's not really anything that like, is something that like changes it, because I think some characters are a little bit different in show versus the books. Like I think that Jaime is kind of slightly, I want to say like more favorable in the show early on, because they add some stuff for him, and you're even kind of like, okay, maybe Jaime's, you know, like we talked about that scene that's not in the books where he's talking to Eddard Stark and he's saying, you know, like when they killed your brother and your father, like that was a terrible thing. And then Eddard Stark kind of blasts back at him.
Right.
You know, he says, is that what you tell yourself at night when you think about how you stabbed the king in the back? But so in this, the biggest difference is we get to see Sansa, and as Arya said, she's smiling, but we get to see Eddard Stark being brought up, and as he's being brought up, she's looking at him and smiling because she thinks that her father is safe. She even looks at Joffrey and smiles when he says he asked Cersei for mercy, and how suddenly that all changes. You know, the biggest difference though is Ned yelling at Yoren as he passes him, as he's being brought up. He says, Baelor, Baelor. And so we get to see Yoren look at the statue and see Arya.
What? That happened? I don't remember that happened.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's go watch the scene from the show, and as they're walking out, Eddard Stark yells at Yorin, Baelor. Baelor, and so he looks up at the statue of Baelor, and that's where he sees Arya. So it's like literally Eddard Stark's last thing he does in the show is save his daughter. It is heartwarming and also heartbreaking.
Yeah, man. I mean, that is so great. Yeah,
it's a super cool addition that they added in, and I think it's. I don't even think they needed to, because you'd already met Yoren in the show, and they didn't need to do it. But I think it was just another way of just making you feel, this is why this guy is such a good character.
Yeah, yep, he's a boss, as you said.
Yeah. So, right. Also, I have to say, watching this scene and watching all of the people of King's Landing rejoicing as. Eddard Stark, Hand of the King, Lord of Winterfell, Warden of the fucking North, is being killed. It just doesn't make me feel as bad when I watch Daenerys burn the city down. Okay? I don't know what it is. It just doesn't make me feel as bad. I'm just gonna say, that's just what I was thinking yesterday when I was watching the scene yesterday. I was like, you know what? I think Daenerys did us a favor, okay?
Yeah,
these people don't know what's good for them. Okay, Daenerys might have been right. All right, I mean they're sitting there rejoicing as Joffrey's about to put the entire entire realm into open chaos over lies that they heard about Eddard Stark. They didn't know the truth. They don't even know the truth. That's like the fake truth. Right, that Robert was killed by a boar. They thought Renly killed him, so they don't know what they're talking about. So
there's so much fake news going on. It's
fake
insane.
News central, man. Okay, I think I'm gonna go ahead and say it. All right, I think that the Westerosi, politics and news cycle, it's influenced by Essos. Okay, there's some Essosy influence going on, and I don't like it. All right,
I don't like it either.
I don't like it. It's
so that's crazy.
Okay. But I will say, I found some really fun. So when I was watching that scene yesterday, I found some really funny comments. And, one of the comments was, I like how YouTube's algorithm has the next, like, cause you know how YouTube has the autoplay where it'll play you and I know how YouTube works, right? It's all about search. And so YouTube wants to keep you on YouTube. And so its autoplay is going to be something that they think you would immediately go to next. So the next most played scene after that, like, so what people are searching for is Joffrey's wedding to Margaery. Yeah. And it's just like the clip art is like him dying. And so it's like people watch that scene, then they immediately go watch Joffrey die. Like, I just thought it was pretty funny. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Jiminy. Oh, that's wild. That is wild. Wow. All right, cool. Cool, man. All right, any other cool connections there before we...
No, that's kind of it. Yeah. But okay. I found that interesting.
Yeah. It's hilarious, man. Watch out for the fake news.
And I got to say, hey, Eddard Stark, I like that thing they added from the show with him.
Yeah.
With him saying, well, Baelor.
I like to think maybe he did it in the books as well. It's just like we get Arya's perspective. I mean,
exactly.
It's maybe she's looking around or whatever and lost and pulling out her sword, and he makes eye contact and, says and saves her life, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, we have a couple of ravens here. This is from Sam the Hammer. We haven't heard from Sam on the show in a while. So Sam says, Sir Matt and Sir Ezra, towards the end of the Hedge Knight, Prince Velar asks why the gods had taken Baelor and spared Dunk. It was only on a second listen that I have realized what a good question that is. There's a lot of foreshadowing in this book that suggests if Sir Duncan the Tall is going to be important to the future of the realm, possibly the most important character in Ghur's world. So the question is why? Duncan the Tall is clearly a great knight and an important figure, but his known achievements are no more than comparable with other great knights like Sir Barristan Selmy, Arthur Dayne, or the Young Dragon. Why was the putting down of Daemon III Blackfyre any more critical to the realm than any other rebellion? The death of Baelor is the start of the collapse of the Targaryen reign and ultimately leading to Robert's rebellion and Dany's invasion. Following on from what we know or don't know, what we now know or don't know, after the conclusion of season 8, do you have any thoughts on what legacy Sir Duncan could have had that outweighs the impact of Baelor's death? What unknown achievements could warrant this holy intervention? Even if he survived Summerhall, what impact did that ultimately have on the realm? Or could he still have a role to play in the books as Cold Hands or through his offspring, regards Sir Sam the Hammer?
Wow, man. That's a great question. So, I mean, for starters there, what Sam is kind of saying and suggesting is that really the reason he's important or it's because of what the consequences, the death of Baelor, mm-hmm. you know, him stepping up and seeing that Dunk was worthy of being, fought for, protected or what have you. And so this trial by seven, Baelor steps in and they have a go and accidentally, Maekar ends up killing his brother. And it's the crumbling then of the Targaryen dynasty. Essentially, it starts to go downhill. Wow. I don't know, man. I mean, like, is there more in, I think there's maybe a lot more that we haven't learned in Summerhall and in regards to the dragon eggs and maybe prophecy and things like that. I mean, if his major role is just saving, maybe he saves everyone there. Maybe he saves, Rhaegar and other folks or something.
Because Rhaegar was born at Summerhall, so.
Yeah, right. And then is he Cold Hands? I mean, we've talked a little bit about that, right, Sir Matt?
Mm-hmm. Is he Cold Hands theories? I mean, that's a huge one. We did a big Patreon episode about that because most people believe Benjen Stark is Cold Hands, but we found quite a bit of evidence that could suggest it actually is Sir Duncan the Tall.
Yeah, right. So I guess to answer to answer Sam's question, like, is there anything else we haven't talked about? Like, no, look, now, you know, he says, looking at the show, is there anything that we see in the show that kind of says that would suggest that maybe Sir Dunk is, like, why does the realm need a Hedge Knight? Why did it not need Baelor Breakspear? You know? Why does that, like, how do we make that line make sense? Is for right now all we really have is that he's maybe tutoring he is a squire, right? Egg is his squire, mm-hmm. and he maybe
I think
will
that
become like a great king.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with him being the one who kind of raises. As we talked in this episode earlier about, you know, Cyril Pharrell and Jaqen H'ghar, those are the influences. It's, I mean, even Duncan says that to Maekar is, you know, did your other sons sleep in hedges or did they, you know, they train mm-hmm. with Master at Arms and all of this stuff. And he wants Egg to be kind of a good person.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess,
I mean, that's why he lets, I mean, ultimately, you know, Jenny of Oldstones marry his son, and who knows what kind of prophecies came because of that. So,
right, yeah, 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 for sure. So, I mean, you know, because George has said that Dunk had, you know, in A Feast for Crows, that a descendant would be kind of revealed,
mm-hmm.
And so people have suggested Brienne of Tarth, and that whole, you know, possible connection and the finding of that shield. So if you look at just her, I guess, I mean, how big of a role does she play in this last season? I guess I'm trying to think, like, is it realm saving? You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Like, what makes him bigger than Sir Barristan Selmy is the question. What makes him bigger than Sir Arthur Dayne?
Well,
because we
actually
talk about those guys way more than we.
Well, I think I don't know that if it's maybe the realm needs a Hedge Knight, and at that time,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know if it's the realm needs a Hedge Knight that's gonna. I don't know if he's like. I don't know if it's necessarily saying that Duncan is, you know, prophecy changing. Like, he's a prophecy changing character. He may just be kind of a, I mean, a prophecy could be for a generation. It doesn't have to be forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so maybe that's what it is. Maybe we've built that lineup to be so much more than what it really is. So, yeah, I can see that. And I kind of lean towards that. And if you want to even start talking about like the ripple effect and the effect that it had, that he had on Egg and then his governing of the realm, and then the things that happened at Summerhall, the survivors of Summerhall, and then even Dunk's children, maybe possible children moving forward. That's all speculation, really. So, well, it's not actually speculation. I mean, George has actually kind of said he has descendants, so that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think you're probably right in that it's just a contained type of thing. But man, I mean, Baelor would have been huge. He had the Dornish connection, and maybe could have. I don't know. Like a lot of Targaryens die. I mean, a mm-hmm. lot of them start to kind of die off in these things. I don't know. Just start happening. Like their mishaps, I guess, if you will, start to plague the Targaryens. So, starting with Baelor.
Mm-hmm.
So, good question, Sam. I mean, I don't really have a great answer for it, other than you know, the realm at the time needed a hedge knight to help prepare Egg. And I think that's the other thing, is that Egg was very unlikely, right? I mean, he was not supposed to be. He was way down the line for King. Like, it shouldn't have been him, correct?
Sir, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. He's the unlikely.
Yeah, so it's like maybe that is really all it is that he was there to kind of befriend and be and help bring up, help raise this boy and help turn him into a great king. So, anyways, I don't know. Awesome, man. Cool. So let's move on here. We've got Sir Matthew Perry has sent us in a raven here. Hey, guys, just wanted to reach out and say thanks for all the wonderful content you guys put out. I love this community that you've created here on Facebook, and it's so fun to be a part of it. I listen to everything you guys put out, including Hyperspace Hangout. Oh, sweet. Okay. Honestly, I wasn't a big podcaster until I found BTK, and I haven't missed an episode yet. I sent one raven to you guys back in February/March, I think right before the show premiered, and you guys actually read it on an episode, and awesome. He was like, I was fanboying, yelling, going crazy in the car. Yeah, good. Well, Sir Matthew, you better be doing that right now, my friend, all right?
Mm-hmm.
that's what I'm saying, man. You send us a raven, we will do our darndest to read it. So I'm almost through my second read of A Feast for Crows, and I cannot wait to start Dance of Dragons. Books 4 and 5 are so different from the show, and the amount of characters that we see is crazy. That's true, man. That's the thing. I've said it from the get-go. Like, I was just doing, I think it was last episode, Sir Matt, we got off and I was talking about getting back into my A Feast with Dragons kind of reread,
mm-hmm.
you know, picking it back up where I'd left off. Yeah, and I was just like, holy cow, I started it. I went on a little trip over the weekend. And I'm like, this is insane. There are just an insane amount of characters. It's just nuts. So anyways, the Young Griff / John Connington storyline is awesome and wish the show could have found a way to include that. Young Griff will be a huge player going forward, and it's a shame we didn't see that come to life in the show. I agree with you both in the aspect of the show ending versus the book ending. It's going to be so different, and I can't wait to see that. Wondering if you guys still have any sort of hope about Winds of Winter coming out this year. I had hoped that Gurm would actually do it the year the show wraps up. Yeah, we did too. I mean, I don't think it's happening this year, but it may happen before. I don't know, man. There's just no indication out there, right? There's just nothing. I mean, we really, there's just no telling anymore. There's so many times where we've hyped it up and said, yep, it's coming this year. It has to be in the next year or so, and it's sort of like, I don't even like putting that pressure on him or ourselves to, the paragraph right before there. Where we had mentioned that there's many characters in the story, there's a lot that he's trying to shore up, and he's trying to go back and look and maybe see where he can finish up a thread and, you know, tie it off or something. So, It would actually be so cool. It would be so cool to actually join you guys on Raven's Nest someday. That'd be sick. We would love to have that. I feel like I know you guys just from listening to you every day. Keep doing what you're doing as always, and I wish you good fortune in the wars to come, and we wish you that as well, Sir Matthew. So, yeah, man, I mean, that's... I think the thing is, do you have any hopes, Sir Matt, that we're going to get the book? It's going to be out like within before the prequels?
I don't think it'll be out before the prequels, but I do think it will be announced. I think it'll be announced before the prequel. I think by the certainly by the end of 2020 it will be announced. I still think it could be announced any time. Like I think he's got to be close. I mean, he's got to be close to being done.
Yeah,
I know. I know. We keep saying that, but I mean, I'm actually surprised it hasn't been announced yet. To be entirely honest.
Yeah. Well. Okay. So again, I was listening to Radio Westeros, and I've said this. It's been about a month or two ago, and I've even read again some more interviews on this and just what George had said. I forget which con he was at, but the idea that he was disappointed almost in himself, and he just felt a little discouraged because the show had outpaced him, and he just never saw that coming. He did not anticipate maybe the workload and the press conferences and all this kind of stuff. So I don't know, man. I'm sure he's working on it, but I really have decided to like no more say, okay, it's going to be this year, next year, it may be 2021, 22, 23.
Wow.
By the time we get it. Yeah, I really kind of, I know that's crazy, but I mean, it's 2019. We had reports of it coming out in, I mean, literally 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18. And it's now 2019. 2019 will end and we'll go into 2020. I am not putting any I know like the longer it goes, the more the closer we should be getting. But I actually think he might have stopped writing it for a while. Like straight up just stopped. He's taking a break. He's getting into some blocks and stuff, and he's getting older. I don't know. It's straight speculation. I have no clue. I mean, I do talk to him on a regular basis, but he doesn't talk to me about this sort of stuff. So, you know, I don't know, man. I'm hopeful, but I'm one of those people who says let him finish. Let him take his time. Let him do it in his own time. It's a masterpiece, and I want it to be great. I know everyone's been asking him, like, are you going to change the books based upon the reaction that you got from the show? And I remember before the season came out, he said he came out with the showrunners and said they will be vastly different. He said the books would be different, and there would be things that are book only that people are going to be like, wow, that is awesome, that's epic. So, yeah, we'll have to see, man. But alrighty, well, I think that's it there. I mean, any other ravens or comments you got? Anything?
Nope, that's it, man. That's all I've got this week. So, all right, well, guys. As always, man the wall a little bit, Sir Ezra here.
Yeah, we've had some good comments on Patreon. I mean, so for the Harrenhal series, and we've actually got someone sent it, I think it was either on Facebook or Patreon, and you reminded me of this before we started the show, but someone brought up a really good counterpoint to the theory that we are reading through, and some of the stuff that Sir Matt and I are presenting on Patreon about the Tourney at Harrenhal, Rhaegar's presentation of the crowning Lyanna Stark, the Queen of Love and Beauty, at the Tourney at Harrenhal. And it's really cool to have people's feedback and to see some of the counterpoints. So that was sort of the point. We wanted people to put their counterpoints out there, or even just follow up points, and we're going to include those again in next month's part three of the Harrenhal series, which really takes off, and part three and four are just insane, really cool stuff. We have a musing coming out, I think, around maybe the 15th or shortly after, so we're going to get to that. And yeah, it's fantastic. We're having a good time over there on Patreon. We've kind of got it spelled out here through the rest of 2019. So if you want to join up, head over to patreon.com/bendthenee.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, guys, as always, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 66, Bran 7.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that winter is coming.